Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Pola sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we've got something happening with the Bulls that I didn't think we would ever talk about. And I've got a little bit of a surprise and hopefully some good sports news coming. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is still shut down because of coronavirus, but how long will that be for? But it will not stop them next season, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, sign up for season tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, we are here on Easter Sunday, on non-Greek Easter. I don't know what you call that.
Palm Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know these things. We are here because there's really nothing going on because I think everybody is stay at home.
Yeah. Everyone's having their own meals at home, whether they're grilling Polish sausage or eating ham or whatever. Usually on Easter, when you go around town, you see all the people at the parties where they have the cars are all lined out, all the families walking in the houses, and now you're not seeing that this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, you are seeing nada. Except what you are seeing is on ESPN, the NBA horse game.
Yeah, I'm looking at Twitter right now, and they're saying it's kind of a disaster, but I don't know. I haven't seen any of it.
I'm watching it right now, and it's as stupid as it sounds. It's Paul Pierce versus Zach LaVine, and it's stupid. They're both on their home courts, like recording via, I don't know, Skype or Zoom? Or something.
That's the big thing now.
Yeah, Zoom. And Paul Pierce is wearing a winter coat and shorts, and he's got a giant Celtics logo on his basketball court, and he looks really fat and out of shape. Like there was Zach LaVine just had one where he kind of jumped up and threw the ball behind him, and Paul Pierce couldn't even jump and throw the ball at the same time.
I was going to say, you have a super young guy who's only been in the league a few years versus ancient Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
Who's been out of the league for a few years now.
I'm older than Paul Pierce and more out of shape, and I could have done that. It didn't require athleticism. Oh my God. Now Paul Pierce just did a sky hook.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeesh.
Yeah, but I guess the first up is we got to talk the big news.
Of course.
We finally have a replacement for John Paxson.
Finally.
This disaster is finally over. And, you know, I'm dying to wait to see what C-Dub and Big Dave have to say from Ball, because it's going to be a just an absolute spit roast. They're going to destroy the Bulls organization over this, the way things have been the last few years. But, I'm not, I love basketball, but it's nowhere near as my love for football or baseball. But, you know, these last several years have just been an absolute disaster for the Bulls organization.
That's putting it lightly, frankly.
I mean, it's been embarrassing. And we finally got to the point where I think, I mean, I don't know if the ownership of the Bulls would have moved on other than the embarrassment factor. The, you know, the empty stadium, the lack of all-star representation when it's on your home floor. Mm-hmm. The interview where people were chanting to fire Gar Packs. Mm-hmm. I read there was a billboard, a Fire Packs billboard.
Yes, there was.
Like,
yes, there was.
At some point, that just, you know, would they have moved on from him if there wasn't the embarrassment factor?
Probably not. You know what Dan Bernstein said on the radio the other day? And you know what? I think he made a good point.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, this is a good point. He said that the hiring of Jim Boylan might have been a good thing in the long run because it really exposed just how unbelievably flawed this organization was from a basketball operations standpoint. If you had brought in a competent coach where it looked like things were better than they were and kind of masked all the issues, we'd probably still be here with Gar Packs right now.
Probably. I mean, we've talked multiple times on this show how many head coaches that John Paxson has gone through in his time here. And,
yeah.
You know, and we talk about how John Paxson was the third most tenured front office person behind Pat Riley and Greg Popovich. And those two guys are Hall of Famers that have won multiple titles. What has
Since
John
2000 started?
Yeah, what has John Paxson done? John
One
Paxson hasn't
Eastern
done
Conference
anything.
Conference final appearance.
Yeah, that's it. He's drafted what two All-Stars?
I mean, Derrick Rose was complete luck and probably somewhat rigged, and Jimmy Butler was just—I mean, they made the one good pick right there. How many other drafts can you say, wow, they really nailed it here? Not a lot.
Yeah, it's unreal. Like, you had two All-Stars, and one you drove into the ground, and the other one you ran out of town.
Mm-hmm. And the return is still kind of up in the air.
And the funny part is, you replace John Paxson with the guy that fleeced him in the trade for Doug McDermott.
God, I forget Doug McDermott was a thing.
Yeah, so...
Is he even still in the league?
I am sure he is.
Doug McDermott?
I'm sure he is.
I haven't heard his name in like 2 years. He probably is, but I don't know where he is.
Yeah, it's it's been an absolute unmitigated disaster. The number of coaches you've gone through, the lack of all-stars, the lack of accountability, just, you know,
the lack of care from the fans the past year or so. The apathy's been at an all-time high.
Doug McDermott plays for the Pacers right now.
Oh, that's right. I completely forgot about that. That goes to show how out of touch I've been with basketball the past few years, NBA basketball. I mean, I used to follow it religiously, but the past few years have just killed it.
It's
and now I'm
tough.
Ready to get it back.
You know, it's one thing if your team is not doing well. You know, like, I've watched the Cubs go through bad seasons. I've watched the Blackhawks go through bad seasons. I've watched the Bears go through bad seasons, but the Bulls have been bad with no plan, no anything. It's just been a disaster. And I'm like, I can't watch this. I can't support this. You know, it's beyond the rebuild. It's, you know, It's the ineptitude. It's the,
It wasn't a rebuild anymore. It was just bad.
It was the lies. It was the, you know, the inability to do anything in a functional manner. It was the lack of accountability. It was just, it was terrible, and I couldn't support it. You know, it's one thing if you're just bad. You're like, okay, you know, we were bad, but we're going to get some contracts off the book, free up some money, we'll have a better draft pick, we can do these things. And you feel like, okay, there's some hope. You just never feel like there's any hope with the Bulls organization, and that was tough to watch. And I feel like they've put an adult in charge now.
This is something that can turn a franchise around if it's all done correctly. Think about it. This guy, AK as everyone calls him, he could change the entire culture of this franchise, and by God, does it need changing. You can just look at the bad play, the bad management, the just how toxic Bulls culture was just embarrassing.
Here's the funny part about it is I think they hired a good person for the job. Like, you know, everything I've read about AK is that this was a good hire. You listen to interviews with, you know, former employers, and you've seen the things he's done, and you're like, okay, rising star in this league. Okay, awesome. But it's funny because they got to the right guy, seemingly, in the most Bulls dysfunctional way, which is hilarious. You know, you could sort of laugh at this point because they got the right. But really, is what a disaster this whole process was. The way they, you know, the way they announced that they were doing it was so, like, you know, typically you make the team makes an announcement that they are moving on from, you know, the former person, and they didn't do that. They didn't even fire the former person. They're going to keep him on in some sort of capacity. And the interview process was weird. And a lot of people turned them down for interviews. It was just a complete Bulls type process of going through, and they found themselves with the right guy, which is crazy.
I think that was their guy all along. Obviously the process was still very weird, but I think he was kind of their number one on their list for throughout this whole search, in my opinion. I think they were the guy that they were always favoring. Obviously you're going to do interviews. Obviously you're going to search. I mean, part of the whole process is picking the brains of your candidates, but I have that feeling that he was kind of their number one guy throughout this process. Just the way it happened so quickly.
That's possible, but, you know, it's the number of people that turned them down for interviews. The fact that they brought in no minority candidates to interview, it was kind of ridiculous. But, I mean, the process of hiring general manager and assistant general manager seems to be much more thorough and organized process already under AK.
Well, and it, you know, we heard the other day that AK is planning on his bringing in of guys who he's considering. I mean, he already has a pool. He already has an idea. And you hear Waj say this on Twitter. He says that AK is planning to start discussing Chicago's GM job with candidates soon. He's got this plan. He knows what he wants. He knows what he's looking for. There's no mention of Gar Foreman. There's no mention of John Paxson. There's no mention of any of the Reinsdorfs. What I see is a guy been given the keys to the car and he is going to drive it. And that is what I think some people were worried about. Okay, so yeah, you bring in this guy, is how much influence is he going to still get from Gar or Pax or Jerry Reinsdorf or Michael Reinsdorf? I think that those fears can be put to rest. I think this is his team. He's going to hire who he wants. And I know Jim Boylan is nervous and he wants to be given a shot, but I don't see him sticking around at all. I mean, the players don't even want to play for the guy. Why would you keep him around? There's no reason to do it. And you know what? I said this on Twitter, and I'm sure you agree too. He's too smart to take advice from John Paxson or Gar Forman or Jim Boylan or Jerry Reinsdorf. He's too smart to be influenced by them.
And he shouldn't be influenced by them. It's Gar Forman should be just absolutely launched. And, you know,
Tribuchet.
Yes. And, you know, here's the thing with John Paxson is, you know, he should be gone too. But if you know, the Reinsdorfs want him around as some sort of ambassador or like he would have no basketball decisions. He wouldn't travel with the team. He wouldn't have an office. He would. No, if the Reinsdorfs want him on their payroll, that's not. I mean, I would even say like he's not like his payroll is separate from you know the basketball operations payroll. I would be very you know distinct with that. Like this is how it's going to be. You're not. He's not going to be on the basketball operations payroll. If you want to pay him, he comes out of whatever other money you have. You know, stadium costs, you know, personal business, if he wants to work for the Reinsdorf organization, that, but not the Bulls basketball funds. Like, that's not happening.
You know, and, I think one of the concession stands on the 300 level is hiring.
Yeah. If he wants to work for the United Center as in concessions, he wants to sell 50-50 raffle tickets, then more power to him. But yeah.
He'll get paid a fortune to it. It's Jerry. Yeah,
He has no business and he shouldn't. You know, they hired somebody who, and John Paxson has not shown enough good decisions to even be worthwhile. Doug Collins should be out. Like everybody, that whole thing, wipe it clean, disinfect it. Treat it like it's in a coronavirus infection. And you go in there and you disinfect that room, clear it out. And you start fresh. You burn it with fire.
Dip it in acid for good measure.
Yeah, burn it with fire. I want
top to bottom.
I want no remnants of the previous stink. And
no.
You know, if it was me, I would come through. And the next person to be launched from the Tribuchet is Randy Brown.
You know, personally, I think the first person in the Tribuchet should be Jim Boylan. That's just my opinion.
Oh, he's going to be, but I want him to witness what's about to happen to him.
Oh, okay. I
want to see the fear in his eyes as he sees how far Randy Brown gets launched.
They all end up in Lake Michigan. Like they're just swimming in Lake Michigan, and there's like a pickup boat for them when they get launched. It's like, all right, get in. It's like this. It's
they
like
throw them a life raft, and they you know the circle thing, the life preserver thing, and fling it with a rope. They come on,
all right,
spit water.
Hang on to the life preserver.
They throw them some floaties,
or one of those big blow up rafts, and like the shady sea captain piloting the boat is just blowing up the big raft as they're getting launched into Lake Michigan.
They've all got little kid life vests that are way too small and have like, you know, dancing frogs on them. But yeah, so this, everything needs to be revamped. You know, we've all thought that the Bulls have some talent on the team. You know, they obviously need some more talent to go with it, but it's been under producing young talent, and I think he just needs to go meet with them all, make sure he makes them aware that he's now in charge. The old way of doing things is gone and you know, let them know that Boylan's going to be gone. And, you know, I would take their input. I don't know how much, you know, you weigh it into your decision on a head coach, but I would at least listen to what they have to say and what their gripes were, because even if it's for show and smoke and shits and giggles, make them feel heard. Like, hey, you know, I realized that there was friction with Boylan, and Boylan's way of doing things was not good. I want to know what you guys need to get the best out of you. And even if it's just, you know, a show like that, make people feel heard and, you know, bring in somebody. Ultimately, if you've got somebody that's winning, you respect winning. You don't respect losing, no matter how good it is.
Yeah, I know. I like that way of thinking. And I think that the first year under AK is going to be a lot of, all right, let's evaluate what we have in the franchise right now, because you're pretty set with your roster, and it's hard to just say, okay, we're going to completely wipe everything clean. It's easier said than done. And look, let's say you bring in the guy you want at coach. All your guys that you want are brought in, you know, the whole coaching staff, not just your head coach, but your whole coaching staff, your development, your scouting, and so on. If you have a new regime in place that is not incredibly outdated, makes sense, and can work good with young players, also a staff that can hopefully keep them a bit healthier, then, you know, you might see some of these young guys bud a bit more, and it'll give you a good idea of what you have going forward. I mean, this is going to take a while to build this team into a winner. It's not going to happen like that. He's not going to wave a few magic wands and suddenly things are going to be good again. You know, we're going to see some rebuilding-like years in the future. But if we have a vision and we have a modern way of thinking and we actually know what we want from the team, where we want it, how we want it, how we're going to get it.
And we learn how to recruit star players.
That too. I mean, the first things first, you got to build a better culture. I cannot say that enough. And to your point of just talking to the guys, yeah, that's step one in rebuilding a culture. The culture was beyond terrible. Your players were having mutinies against your coach. I saw a tweet suggesting, give Jim Boylan a chance for this next coming year under Artis and Artie. I think he put it as Artie. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he called AK Artie, which he's going to have a lot of nicknames. But anyway, he was saying, you know, give him a chance, see what happens. Why? Why would you do that? Why would you bring back a captain that didn't have control of his crew? And you want to storm the seas of a season? There's no way that should happen. Absolutely no way. If you bring in someone good that can actually establish a regime that actually works in the modern NBA, and use the players you have, the young players you have, their potential, you might see the budding. And you might see it better. And then you could kind of move forward and have a better idea what you want. Because, I mean, look, if you just go up and trade everyone away, you're probably trading away young guys with some potential for scraps. You don't want to do that either. And I'm not saying that this Bulls core, I think, is suddenly going to be championship caliber. I really don't see that in most of these guys. But you at least got to see what you have first.
Yeah, you can't bring back Jim Boylan. You can't. That's absolute, you know, a no-no. And he's going to be gone. I can't see any circumstance where he's brought back. It's been a disaster. He's been feuding with players. The fans don't like him. He doesn't make any sense when he's doing things. So, like, I don't get how you could bring him back, like, under what circumstances.
No. And I don't think that Michael or Jerry, based on what we've heard, are holding a gun to his head saying, bring back Jim Boylan. I mean, he basically said nobody's, they've said like nobody's safe. At least that's according to the reports. I think the words were, they're not going to throw Jim Boylan a life preserver. The shady captain in Lake Michigan is going to throw him a life preserver when he's launched by the Trebuchet, not the Reinstorfs.
Sorry to change subjects here. I'm watching The Stupid Horse, and it's hilarious. So they have like a WNBA player from the Chicago Sky, and she's going against Chris Paul, and it's hilarious. You can totally tell the salary differences because he's got this like super nice court with like decorative trees surrounding the court, and it's like an actual, you know, nice hardwood. She's on the driveway with a portable basketball hoop, and the lines and everything are, and the 3-point mark are drawn in chalk, in like sidewalk chalk.
She's playing the classic way. That's how we all played growing up.
Yeah, but it's hilarious how to see the salary differences here, because she probably makes like $50,000 a year and he makes like $20 million.
Yeah, Chris Paul has raked in plenty of cash over the years.
Yeah, so you could totally tell the difference in their courts and the, you know, the backboards, and he's got a full glass one, and she's really got like the old school portable one.
Hey, and like could, I said, and, she and is when, embracing real and horse.
And when she's hitting the backboard with the ball, you can see the whole thing shake.
Yep, that's that's how horse is meant to be played. Damn it.
But I mean, going back to the Bulls, I think this is a good time here, is you can wipe the slate clean. You're going to have some salary cap room. You know, you've got some guys you can move on, like Thaddeus Young, Thomas Satoransky, to make you some more space. You know, you've got decisions to make on what you're going to do, with Chris Dunn and Denzel Valentine. I want an incompetent adult making those decisions and not Garpax.
Yeah, I hear that. I just think the biggest questions I have with the current roster that they have right now, that I'm hoping to get answered this coming year, is Lauri really going to be part of this? Because we've seen a lot of regression from him. We've also seen a lot of injury issues from him. At the same time, he has really not been used the way he's wanted to be used. I mean, look at the feud between him and Jim Boylan. That's been made very public. Will he be utilized much more like he should be? I would hope so, with the new change.
And Markkanen was pretty clear that, you know, he wanted to see, he didn't want to come back to this organization in the state that it was in.
That's probably what helped force their hand.
And so you have, I don't know if this will, I don't know if this will matter at all, but you've got Markkanen, who's a European player, and Karnisovas is a former European player. Does that help him in his communication with him? Because like, hey, listen, I've played at a high level coming from Europe, playing, you know, American style basketball, and, you know, I can relate to you. Does that help at all? I don't know, but it's probably not hurting.
No, yeah, I mean, for those of you who don't know, AK played in the Olympics back in the 90s.
Lithuania.
Yes, he is Lithuanian.
Yeah. So, you know, it's got to at least help to be able to understand, you know, where he's coming from and understand the European style of play. You know, I want to see Lauri Markkanen succeed. I want to see
team,
you know, I want to see him become the guy that we thought he was going to be when we drafted him. And I'm tired of Chicago sports teams having guys with high ceilings that they never reach and that are disappointments. I want somebody to reach their potential. I want to see that. I want to see him become that guy. We've seen flashes of it at times, but then it just fades away so quickly.
We've had a lot of duds in this city, haven't we?
We have had a lot of duds. And you know, to be honest with you, there's been some terrible head coaches here. Does bringing in a legitimate coach with a legitimate front office staff help make things better?
And like I said, I think a better coaching staff can help these guys butt a bit. And you know what? If they get new trainers and new staff with the conditioning, hopefully they don't get injured as much, because that's been one of the problems. They've battled so many injuries. The core hasn't played together pretty much at all. If Lauri Markkanen was hurt, then he'd come back, and then you'd have Wendell Carter Jr. getting hurt, and then you'd have Zach LaVine getting hurt, and it was a rotating door of injuries for the core guys. They were never on the court at the same time, so you don't really even have a good idea of how they meshed with any sort of coaching staff. We didn't see it under Hoiberg, we didn't see it under Boylan, so we can hopefully pray that we'll see it under whoever's the next coach now, and see how they mesh with a modern thinking, competent NBA coach. Because I mean, look, Fred Hoiberg wasn't good, but he was just a guy over his head.
Yeah, he was actually a likable guy. Likable guy over his head. College coach. He's a college coach.
He's a college coach. Exactly.
That's his ceiling. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. That's not a very high level. Like, he coached college basketball at a high level. That's a very impressive thing. I'm not going to knock him.
Absolutely. But
the NBA is an elite league, and you need to be a certain level of coach. And he wasn't there. And and he went back to where he's better served.
Exactly.
Boylan is kind of an asshole.
Well, it's when you have no respect from your players because of the way you coach, the way you talk, the way you act, the way you answer questions in media conferences. I don't get it. Like, he's been in the NBA a while as an assistant. What has he been doing? And he's worked with Greg Popovich. It's not like he's been on just scrub teams. He's been parts of, pretty notable coaching regimes.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know. I don't understand. So I'm curious to see where this is going to go. I'm expecting the GM and assistant GM. I mean, I like that he's going through and from his spot down and making the decisions rather than unilaterally doing. So he's bringing in, sounds like he's going to hire his GM. And then I'm guessing that together they're going to hire an assistant GM and then all work together to bring in a new head coach. And I like that. Everything's seeming methodical. Everything seems like he had a plan in place and knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He had a list of guys already for his GM spot.
He wanted the job, so that's why when he was really hoping for the job, he was probably devising the play. That's probably one of the things that he was talking about in his interview, was kind of his structural plan, I would assume.
The people he wants to bring in are people that have accomplished things in this league and not Gar Forman.
Right. We saw some of the names that Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted out. You had Calvin Booth, who he worked with in Denver. Now, he's probably the likely candidate to get promoted there, so we'll see. But Mark Eversley from the Sixers, Mark Hughes from the Clippers, and Matt Lloyd from the Magic have been mentioned. So you have some names that have been part of different regimes. You look at a guy like Mark Eversley from the Sixers. The Sixers have had some success. If he can snag Calvin Booth, then you know, that would probably be a nice win right there because they've already worked together. So you're hearing names that you want to hear, even if you're not exactly experts on them, which I am not, but you're not promoting from within. You're not, it's not like, oh, hi, we hired you. Could you rearrange some of our deck chairs and work with that? Nope. He wants to bring in his own guys, and it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if what I'm reading is true, you know, this stepping back here a bit, the NBA might be back sooner rather than later. I've read that they're talking that they're giving everybody a 25-day notice of to get ready. So it sounds like they might be ready to come back in a month.
We'll see.
I agree with you. We'll see, because it's going to be it's going to be tough unless they're going to be playing in empty arenas, which is possible.
Even so,
because they're talking about they're going to blood test every player. And, you know, so they know that the people on the court are free of coronavirus. But, you know, if they want to have people in the stands, like every state is going to be different unless they're trying to go to a neutral site. You know, I read the NBA or NHL was thinking about doing a neutral site in North Dakota, probably because North Dakota probably has less restrictions on on what the, like, Illinois is very strict, California very strict, probably less strict in North Dakota, and playing some neutral site playoff games. So I'm curious to see what the league's thinking is, and how this translates into what the NHL is going to do, because I'm sure the NBA and NHL are in contact, because, you know, they're probably going to take similar approaches.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if one does one thing, they want to follow the other. Because if you remember, when the NBA shut down, the NHL pretty much immediately did the next day. I mean, all the other sports leagues did. But, you know, their schedule is so similar to the NBA that they kind of want to be on the same page. And it wouldn't be a good look in their minds for one of the leagues to bring back operations and the other not to.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to not get backlash if it doesn't work out. If both leagues do it, you know,
right.
both leagues take on the same approach. It's hard to fault them, but if one decides to start back up and the other one doesn't, and you know, the one that starts back up, it becomes a disaster. You know, people get infected and, you know, there's all kinds of problems. You know, the other one's going to, you know, be cast in a good light. And I think it looks bad. So, I think they're both going to go lockstep with what the other one's doing.
Yeah.
And definitely. I'm sure that they've been in contact. I know the heads of the leagues have been in contact. You know, they've had meetings with Trump. I'm sure they have meetings with each other, because there's only a handful of them of professional sports leagues, and they're all in this shit together.
Yep.
But I'm really curious to see what the commissioner is going to do for the NBA. It sounds like they're gung ho about going, and you know, not for nothing, the lockdowns have been working. I mean, I've looked at data for Illinois, and when the lockdown started, we were estimated to have our peak number of hospitalizations and deaths and et cetera, right at the end of April. And now it's been this weekend. Like, we're starting to, the curve is, you know, the curve is going down. We've got less people dying, less hospitalizations. We're starting to go down, and the the peak is well under what, you know, our healthcare system can handle. So it looks like we're on the mend. So, I mean, in a month, you feel, you know, what is it, like 2-3 weeks to get to the top. So probably another 2-3 weeks to get down. You know, let's see how that goes.
Yeah. Again, you know, we don't know for sure, but we are hoping for the best. Absolutely.
I mean, I think everybody wants people to be healthy and, but us all to get back to our regular way of life ASAP.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, no doubt. This has been tough. You know, it's tough. There's no sports. Internet has been slow. I want to just go out and do something.
I hear you. Believe me, I hear you.
Yeah. But the only other thing I wanted to bring up was, you know, the last couple weeks we've had a kind of a theme, kind of a game to play. You know, best and worst sports moments, and we didn't decide on one last week, but for this week. But I don't know. I was thinking this morning, what if we talk about a few Chicago sports what ifs?
Okay.
I'm going to start with a Cubs one first.
Okay.
So there was a certain guy that the Cubs drafted in 1982. He was a shortstop out of Thomas Jefferson High School in Brooklyn, New York. And he was taken number one overall, named Sean Dunstan. I'm sure you remember him.
The Sean-o-meter.
The Sean-o-meter. What if, instead of taking Sean Dunstan, they would have taken Dwight Gooden instead?
Well, you'd have another heck of an arm in the rotation. No doubt about that. Maybe they could have even gotten to a World Series with that core.
I mean, there, a lot of people probably, unless they lived through that era, don't recognize how good Doc Gooden was. Because he was, as a person, he was a train wreck. But man, there was a period of time where he was just unhittable. He was absolutely dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you could have put him in the Cubs, you know, I think you could have gone to, you know, a World Series sooner. I mean, having an elite arm like that,
that could carry you. I mean, that it's not the one thing that can carry you, but that could definitely boost your chances. I mean, look at some of the teams we've seen make the World Series in recent years, like the New York Mets in 2015. The way they were able to ride that ace pitching staff, I mean, that can carry you a pretty long way. If you mix him with Rick Sutcliffe in the 80s,
yeah,
Greg Maddux later on.
I mean, he's a 53 WAR pitcher.
It's pretty good.
Pretty, pretty, pretty good. You look at his stats. So in 84, when the Cubs should have gone to the World Series, he was 17-9 with a, that was his rookie season where he won Rookie of the Year, and was runner up in, I believe he was runner up in Cy Young, 17-9 with a 2.6 ERA.
That's really good. Didn't Sutcliffe win the Cy Young that year?
I believe he did. And the next year followed that up, went going 24-4 with a 1.53 ERA in 276.2 innings pitched.
That's like ungodly good.
That's stupid good.
Yeah.
He won the Cy
Young. It's better than Arrieta in 2015.
Yeah, that is. I mean, he he ended up coming back to earth on some of those numbers. But, you know, the next year he was 17-6 with a 2.84 ERA, 15-7 with a 3.21 ERA, 18-9 with a 3.19 ERA. Having a guy of that caliber in that rotation, Sean Dunstan was a nice player, but Sean Dunstan was not an elite player.
Right.
You know, pulling up Sean Dunstan's numbers here. He's in a career 11 war player. You know, it's a big difference. Big time
huge,
difference.
Huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, you look, here's his OPS from that same time period that I was reading Doc Gooden. OPS, 698, 690, 626, 627, 724. Yeah, so in that time period, he only went batted over 260 one time.
So, was that 270? This 273, right? The year the Sean-O-Meter year, was that 273?
This was 278.
Then 278. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, so. Yeah, it's, you know, he was an all right player. He, you know, a couple time all star, but the number one overall pick, you want somebody that's elite.
Absolutely.
You could have easily had Doc Gooden in that pick. And interesting note, Dale Swaim was the 25th overall pick in that same draft.
Really?
Really?
Hmm.
Let's see. Sorry, my computer is being slow. All right, let's go with this one then. Let's stay with another Cubs one.
Okay.
What if Mark Pryor would have stayed healthy?
Oh, that's a question we ask a lot. I mean, I think if he's healthy, especially the next year in 04, and he does what he did in 03, I think they at least make the playoffs again. At least. I think they... I mean, you go down the road, and you see the Cubs fell apart for a number of reasons. Their bullpen, you had a lot of injuries outside of just Pryor and Wood. You had, you know, guys get injured like Derek Lee in 06, or... I think Ramirez was hurt one of those years. That was a bit later, though. But I think if Mark Pryor stayed healthy and did what he did, you would have seen him make more than one postseason at least. And I think you would have maybe even seen a Cy Young or two in there. I mean, that could have completely changed the way Cubs history was wrote. I mean, would we be where we were today with them if Mark Pryor had worked out? I don't know.
I mean, the guy had so much talent, and it's funny because his mechanics were so good. You looked at him and you're like, okay, a guy with this kind of mechanics, you don't expect him to have the injuries like he did.
Right. And you know, that was kind of the thing with Wood. He was so good, but people are like, man, he's going to blow his arm out early in his career, even.
Yeah. So that's a man. That's a big it. What if? I got another one here.
Okay.
What if the Blackhawks had chosen Dominic Hasek over Ed Belfour?
I mean, they were both Hall of Fame goaltenders.
Ed Belfour, great goalie, but Dominic Hasek was one of the best.
You might argue he might be the best ever. Like I think there are arguments to be made that he might be the best ever.
You know, for the next decade after that trade happened, Dominic Hasek probably had the best stretch of goaltender play in that time period ever.
Sure.
Man. It's tough. I mean, the good thing about it is at least you had a good goaltender there to ease the pain, but
yeah, you had another Hall of Famer in Ed Belfour.
But Dominic Hasek, it's like it's like different level of, you know, there's multiple levels of Hall of Fame. Like there's the Michael Jordan level of Hall of Fame. And then, there's, can't even think of who I could say.
The Scottie Pippen level of Hall of Fame.
Well, Scottie Pippen's still really good, but yeah, you know, there's a difference, but like, I guess there's, baseball would be the Harold Baines level of Hall of Fame.
I was just going to say that.
And then the Ted Williams level of Hall of Fame.
Right.
Like, you know, both are Hall of Famers, but there's a different level, you know?
Sure.
So it's hurts, and you probably feel like they could have maybe won a title in that time period with Dominic Hasek as opposed to Ed Belfour.
Maybe.
I mean, it's hard because you know, it's hard to predict those kind of things because with a goalie, when you get a hot goalie, you can really ride them. I mean, look at some of the performances where we've had during the 2010s with the Blackhawks with just elite level goaltending. Look at Jonathan Quick with the Kings. How
sure.
The way he played lights out just made it so hard to beat that Kings team at times. And, you know, when he finally played like a human being rather than, you know, some sort of demigod, the Kings became beatable, you know, just with a slight step down in play. And, you know, so it's hard to predict because Dominic Hasek played at such an elite level that, you know, having a solid team around him could just elevate them that much further.
Now you could ask this though, if they had Dominic Hasek and let's say they got themselves into a championship at some point under him, then it probably doesn't get as bad in the mid 2000s. Then you don't have Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane. And then you probably don't have a dynasty in more recent years.
Yeah. What if the White Sox wouldn't have traded Sammy Sosa to the Cubs?
Oh, that's a good question too. I think the Cubs might have been in legit danger of losing a generation of fans if it weren't for Sammy Sosa, because in the mid 90s, the Cubs were bad and irrelevant. I mean, they just were. They were uninteresting. They were not competitive, and I just think that there would have been many in the next generation of Chicagoans lost if Sammy Sosa had not brought that team back to life in 98.
Yeah, I mean, he carried that team.
Yeah. Would he have become the guy with the White Sox? I don't know either. Because he was a pretty mediocre ball player before he came to the Cubs.
Yeah, he was. I mean, but he was probably going to enhance, quote unquote, himself no matter where he went, right?
Yeah, that could be.
But, I mean, if the White Sox could have had a guy that hit 545 home runs on their team, I think you would see a different level of fandom, you know, because you build fans through, you know, from youth. You know, the Cubs are a national team. You know, you have fans from all over the place. The White Sox are a local team, and that's not a knock. It's most teams are like that.
Right.
And if you had a whole generation of youth growing up watching Sammy Sosa hit all these home runs on your team, it probably changes the demographic of what the fans are as adults, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I think you might have lost a generation of fans for the Cubs had Sammy Sosa not helped bring him back.
Right. And you know, those fans were going to become White Sox fans. Yeah, I mean,
many of them, like, yes.
It's not like, oh, you magically created baseball fans out of nothing. They were people that were going to watch baseball anyway, and you know, they became Cubs fans because of Sammy Sosa and they making a team relevant. Irrelevant Cubs and having a guy hitting all those home runs for the White Sox, you know, that's a new generation of White Sox fan.
Right. Yeah.
That changes things. And, you know, that's one where, I mean, championship wise, I don't think it impacts anything, but as far as, you know, perception of teams in the city and, you know, where they're at as far as attendance and, TV market, et cetera. I think, yeah, then it becomes an impact. And I think we're going to see what kind of impact that is with the White Sox going forward. And it's going to be a long-term kind of, experiment, because you're going to have young kids that are going to start seeing the White Sox when baseball finally starts again. You're going to see the White Sox be good. And you're going to have a bunch of young kids growing up seeing the White Sox be good. And then in the decades after that, we're going to see, does that change the dynamic of number of Cubs fans versus Sox fans? Is that going to change the TV viewership over the long period of time? Jersey sales, ticket sales, et cetera. You know, are we going to start seeing that even out between the teams?
See, the way I see it is, I think the White Sox will obviously get more attention, get more fandom, and really increase there. But I don't see much changing on the Cubs' perspective. Yeah, you're going to have some people jump ship. Yeah, you're going to have other people kind of shift their interests. But I think it's more about what it's going to do for the White Sox and how it's going to affect the Cubs. No matter what, the Cubs are going to have a huge fan base. I don't think that's going to change.
I meant it more like the young kids that are deciding on their team, not people jumping ship. But, you know, when you grow up, part of the reason why there's so many Packer fans in this area is because the Bears haven't been good. And people just like, oh, well, I'll be a Packer fan. You know, there's going to be young kids that are just getting into baseball and they're going to say, oh man, the White Sox are really good. I like them better than the Cubs. And it's natural. People want to root for a team that wins. And if you're making your decision on two local teams, you're probably, you know, unless, I mean, the two of us got raised by big time Cub fans. And so, you know, but there's other people that are just casual fans or their allegiance isn't like that die hard. And
it's that way everywhere with sports fans. There's sports fans like that everywhere.
Yeah. And then so when you have a kid that has a choice between the two local teams, you know, if it's going to be interesting to see where the shift comes on, you know, as those kids grow up, you know, did they become White Sox fans instead of Cubs fans because the White Sox were good? And, you know, are then they going to raise White Sox fans when they have kids? Setting up a long-term winning culture, which is what we're anticipating with the White Sox. Like how is that going to change the way the team is perceived going forward in the long term?
Yeah, I mean, success is naturally going to breed more attention and more following. And, you know, if the White Sox, if everything does work out for them, it's definitely going to bring them in some more interest, some more fans, some more viewership, more merchandise being bought. There's no question about that. You know, you brought up the whole Packer thing. And, you know, I got to tell you, I think if the Bears don't find some sustained success soon, I think that the Bears fan base is in danger. When this next like generation kind of takes over in the fandom world, I think the Bears are kind of in trouble, because I feel like so much of the Bears fan base now is like 50 plus year olds who just kind of live on nostalgia from like the 80s. But I got to tell you, I drive around the suburbs, the Chicagoland area. I see a lot of the kids playing football. They're wearing Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers jerseys. They're not wearing Bears jerseys. And I think with the way today, especially now, when you have access to technology where you can easily watch the superstars of the league, that's going to naturally bring more sports fans following those types of people. I mean, look at the NBA now. There's lots of people in the NBA who really just pledge allegiance more to the superstar player than a team. I mean, that's a big thing more than ever, I think, today. So if the Bears don't find some sustained success, I think they're in trouble with the next generation of fans, because I think a lot less of the younger generation are Bears fans than the older generation was.
I agree. The Bears need to come up with a winner. And I honestly, I want to be optimistic for this year, but I'm not. It's tough after watching last year. You're like, what ways did they improve? What ways did they improve that's going to make them not an 8-8 team? And you can say, well, the year before they were very good, and you're hoping to have improved quarterback play, but there's a lot of what ifs. You know, are they closer to the team that they were the year before, or are they closer to the team that they were last year? Because those are two vastly different teams.
Yeah, right now I kind of see it as somewhere in the middle. I mean, if you ask me what my personal opinion on this Bears team right now is, I see a team that can win that division. I think it's a winnable division, and I also think that another benefit they have this coming year versus last year is I think their schedule is a bit more manageable just looking at the matchups. But I'm not sitting here confidently saying that they can win a Super Bowl. Right now I see them, their ceiling as a team that can squeak out a division title or playoff appearance, maybe win a playoff game, but that's about it. It's kind of like those early 90s Bears teams where they were good enough to make the playoffs, but you knew that they weren't going to win a Super Bowl. When Steve Walsh was your quarterback, sure, you squeaked one out. Or who was the other guy who won two playoff games in the early 90s? No, somebody else. Was it Mike Tomczak? Was that his name?
We had Tomczak. We had Harbaugh.
But
Harbaugh
you
was not that good. He was good with the Colts. We had Mike Tomczak.
Steve Walsh.
Yeah.
Those are the guys. I mean, you actually watch those teams. You could probably, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. You saw them make the playoffs, but you didn't think they were going to win a Super Bowl.
No, you you're always hopeful, but it just, you never felt that confident. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to even think Super Bowl going into this year, even if you're really good, because how the hell do you beat Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs?
Right. The only thing you can hope about that is, I mean, the right now they might be set up for a dynasty, but the only hope that you would have in beating them is just hoping that their defense really sucks and then maybe gives you a chance, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. So, you know, the Bears had their opportunity. Their opportunity was 2 years ago.
That's a what if. That's a big what if. We're doing this whole what if game.
Yeah, that's the what if. You know, had the Bears made that kick, beat the Eagles, where do they go from there? Because that was a winnable Super Bowl. It would have been tough.
Oh, the Super Bowl. I think the biggest roadblock would have been New Orleans.
I think so too. I think they could have won that. And
you could have beaten LA again.
You could have beaten LA again. That would have been tough though, because it would have been in LA. They were a different team in LA, but
You would have had more Bears fans there cheering you on.
Probably. That's a what if, man. If they could have come, made that kick, had they, Trubisky played like he did in the fourth quarter, in the first three quarters. The defense did a good job. What did they give 18 points or 19 points?
16.
The score? 16.
It was 16-15.
Yeah. So they gave, if you give up less than 20 points, you feel like you should win.
Especially at home.
Yeah, so another what if.
Go a step further for that season. What if you beat the Packers in week one and you get 13 wins and you get a bye week?
That would have changed things too. Because then you would have had somebody coming to you. You would have, had a bye the first round, and you would have had somebody coming to you. And changes everything.
Heck, if look at the four losses in the regular season. Three of those you could have, should have won. Let's say they win that Packer game and then they beat the Dolphins. You can get over the Pats loss. That was whatever. You can get over as bad as it was, you can get over the Giants loss because that was the trappiest of trap games, but you should have beaten the Dolphins and you should have beaten the Packers. You would have been 14-4. You would have had home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs and a bye week.
Right. Yep.
I have another what if you don't mind me bringing it up.
Yeah, go for it.
In terms of seasons. This didn't bother me at the time, but the more and more I think about it, had the Cubs had a consistent offense in 2018, the more I look back at that season, the more I realize what a huge opportunity that was that slipped by.
Yeah. They won 95 games, and they won 95 games, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So they had a very good team, but you're right. The offense was never consistent. You didn't have that feeling like you did in 2016.
Oh, not even close. Even the 2017 team that was awful in the first half felt better. There was something right about that team that you just did not have much confidence in. Going to that wild card game, I didn't say, oh, I know we're going to lose, but I couldn't tell you I was overly confident going into that game.
Right. That Colorado game was painful.
Oh, it was bad.
I would have rather gotten blown out than the way it happened.
I know.
They score one run in 9 innings and then go all, what was it, 13th? I think it was the 13th, and they never scored more than one run.
I think, yeah. And then remember, they only scored one run in game 163 the day before. So back-to-back home games, essential to the season, more than the two sets of 9 innings. You had extra innings in the wild card game, and you scored a total of 2 runs.
Yeah, and it was all stupid singles that scored the run in the 13th. But they scored one run in 13 innings.
Yeah.
Tough. Painful.
And even if they would have just at least made it back to the NLCS that year, I think feelings would be so much different. I have a question for you kind of related to this.
Okay.
looking back after they won in 2016, so let's just say the offseason before 2017, and you're thinking about where the Cubs would be by now.
Okay.
Where do you think they would have been by now?
So in what way?
So I'll give you my example. This should explain it to you. I thought by 2020, I wasn't sure if they'd win another World Series, but I at least thought it was a safe bet to think that they would have at least made it back to one by now. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, I would absolutely have agreed with that. I would have thought that we would at least, if we hadn't been to another World Series, at least another NFC championship. I'm sorry, NFC. they would have been to at least one, league championship series.
Well, they were in 2017.
Yeah, but I thought what they would have, they would have been like that team. You know how the Blackhawks were during the Cup run? You know, you had – I felt like they would have been like that. And, right on the cusp, if they weren't going to make the World Series, they were going to be really darn close.
I see.
But I would have assumed that based on the trajectory, 2015, how good they were, and just kind of ran into a buzzsaw team, and then winning in 2016, I was like, okay, I see this as, I thought we'd have two World Series appearances with at least one win.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought that would have been a reasonable expectation. I mean, I guess nothing's reasonable in baseball with expectations.
Oh, right, for sure. And I mean, it was pretty cool to see them get back to the NLCS the year after they won. But that series, going into that series, I don't think really many people, even being the defending champs, I thought it was pretty obvious that the Dodgers were going to win that series. That year, they were just so much better, and the Cubs were out of gas. They pretty much running on fumes, trying to win, putting every last ounce of energy that Game 5 of the NLDS against the Nationals. They weren't going to win that NLCS regardless, but boy, 2018, I thought, okay, here's our chance to get it all back. But that didn't happen. So that's another what if for me, that 2018.
I hate the what ifs. Because we always focus on the ones that are negative. What if Derrick Rose wouldn't have got hurt? What if Jim McMahon wouldn't have got hurt?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sick of the what if Trubisky, Mahomes, Watson. I don't even want to bring that up. I'm just sick of it.
I definitely on purpose did not bring that one up. Never.
Thank you.
Did. It's because I hate. I mean, because that's,
We talked about it enough. We know.
We've beat it to death, and I think that when people pose it, it's one thing if you pose it honestly. Where, you did it as an academic type exercise, where would the Bears be? And you meant it serious, would they have won the Super Bowl in 2018? Would Mahomes have progressed as fast under Matt Nagy as he did under Andy Reid?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But, most of the time people do it to just beat down the Bears. That was a dumb decision, man. Imagine what they could have done with this. It's a different tone and different rationale behind why you're doing it. And when none of us said, oh yeah, definitely go get Pat Mahomes with that pick. Nobody said that.
Right.
So I hate revisionist history. And hindsight is 2020 to beat somebody down, because it's easy to go back and see how results were and say it was dumb that you didn't choose that. It's easy to say when you know the answer. It's really hard when you're sitting there making the decision and you're you know, your job is riding on it, like who to draft. It's, you know, especially when nobody else had that, had the right answer. The Chiefs, I think, you know, I'll never know the answer to this, but my thinking is they just wanted one of those three quarterbacks, and whoever was left, because they traded up, they traded a lot to get Mahomes. I think they wanted one of those three, and whoever it was, that's the guy they were trading up for. And they lucked out that it was Mahomes. It wasn't some magical thing that that they did and outsmarted everybody else. I think they were like, well, we need a quarterback. We are moving on from Alex Smith at some point. We just need this guy. And it lucked out that it was Mahomes.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add to that.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, everything else is a whole lot of nothing. Though I guess it's worth mentioning we've had a few more notable deaths in Chicago sports the past few days. We had Glenn Beckert pass away today, former All-Star Cubs shortstop. And then, died today.
I didn't hear that. Ugh, that's sad.
Glenn Beckert.
Been about 80?
79.
Oh, it's close.
79 years old. That's, he was a fan favorite back then. He was one of my dad's favorites.
That was a little before my time.
Yeah, I mean, that was the 60s.
But yeah, that's sad to see him go.
It is definitely. And Pat Stempleton, one of the Blackhawks captains from the late 60s, early 70s, he was with some of those teams that made the Cup Finals in those times. He was 79. He passed away.
When did he pass away? I didn't hear that.
The other day.
Huh.
I think it was Thursday or Friday.
Jeez. I don't know if you saw the guy from the Oilers died.
Yeah, 25 years old.
Yeah, that was insane.
Really sad.
You know, I think when I first saw that he'd been hospitalized, I was like, oh man, probably coronavirus related. But then I saw it was like a tumor in his head. It caused a brain bleed, and they put him in a medically induced coma and never came out of it.
Yeah, that's sad. Such a young age.
Yeah, it's
it's my age.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. Be thankful for what you got.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's gonna do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please make sure you hit subscribe. However you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, the TuneIn app, Google Play, Spotify, we're all on all of them. Make sure you subscribe on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the podcast. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the bears go bearing down, I wanna...